fishing. It's moved way past being just an annoyance, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
It's now like definitively the number one way cyber criminals get into small and medium businesses. We're talking 2025 threats here.
It's the main door they're knocking on, yeah.
And here's the really scary part, the thing we need to grapple with today. You can train your employees, you can spend a fortune on it, but still, one click, that's all it takes.
One mistake, and they're in.
And the cost. The average hit for an SMB from a successful attack is now over, what, $1.8 million? It's staggering.
Yeah, and that $1.8 million, it's often misunderstood. People think cleanup.
Right, fixing the immediate breach.
But it's so much more. Mm. It's weeks, maybe months of downtime. It's potential regulatory fines if data got out. Think GDPR, HIPA.
Uh-huh.
And then there's the long-term hit to your reputation. That's the part that can really, truly break a small business.
Okay, so that sets the stage. What's our mission today, then? How do we fight back effectively?
Our mission today is laser-focused. We're diving deep, specifically into Cisco umbrella configurations, the expert-level stuff.
Okay.
The promise here is blocking up to 90% of these sophisticated phishing attempts. We're moving past generic advice.
Good.
We need to talk critical tiered policy choices, because what works for your finance team isn't right for the guest Wi-Fi, right?
Makes sense. Different roles, different risks. And where's this info coming from?
We've pulled this directly from real-world policy guides, from actual deployments. We're focusing on DNS layer security.
Why DNS layer specifically?
Because it's the fundamental defense now.
Yeah.
It has to be. We're up against AI-generated lures, super-targeted text message phishing, smishing, and these complex multi-stage attacks designed specifically to sneak past all those traditional defenses you probably have.
Okay, let's dig into that. We've spent decades, literally decades, perfecting email filters. And stats say, what, 94% of malware still arrives via email?
That's right.
But why are those filters failing now? What changed so dramatically?
Evasion. That's what changed. Your traditional email security, it's good at matching signatures, known threats, obvious bad attachments.
The stuff we've seen before.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it completely falls down against two big modern threats. First, spear phishing. Really targeted emails using convincing language, maybe referencing internal projects. Looks legit.
Harder to spot automatically.
Very. And second, maybe even more critical, newly registered malicious domains. Attackers spin these up just for one campaign. Maybe it only exists for 48 hours.
Wow.
By the time that domain gets flagged, reported, and the update trickles down your security stack, the attack's done. The damage is done. They're gone.
So the threat gets past the inbox.
Mm-hmm.
Where does DNS layer security catch it? How does that work?
It hits it at the absolute earliest stage, the foundation. When you click a bad link, your computer first has to ask, where is this domain? That's a DNS request.
Right, like looking up a phone number.
Precisely. DNS security intercepts that request, checks it against a massive threat intelligence database. And this happens before your browser even starts to load the malicious website.
So the bad stuff never even reaches the user.
Never. The connection just fails. It's pure prevention. Stops it dead in its tracks before it even starts.
Okay, that sounds incredibly effective. But here's the worry, right? If you're blocking at that fundamental DNS level, aren't you going to block legitimate stuff too? Like, a brand new startup launches their website, it's newly seen. How do you tell if it's legit or malicious? Massive false positive potential.
That's the million-dollar question. And the answer is scale, intelligence scale. Umbrella processes something like 620 billion DNS requests every single day, globally.
Okay, that's a huge number.
It's immense. And all that data feeds these really sophisticated machine learning models. They're not just looking for known bad domains.
They're looking for patterns.
Exactly. Behavioral anomalies, weird registration patterns where it's hosted, signs of suspicious infrastructure setup before it's ever used in an attack.
So you're spotting the intent behind the domain, not just waiting for it to bite someone first.
That's it, precisely. We call it predictive intelligence. The models look at, say, super new domain registrations, weird hosting choices, fast flux DNS patterns where the IP address changes constantly, and they flag these domains before they launch an attack. This predictive piece, it means Umbrella often identifies and blocks threats, on average, 24 hours before other security vendors even list them.
24 hours ahead? That's huge for zero-day phishing.
It's proactive protection against brand new campaigns. That's the goal.
Okay, so the big takeaway here is one-size-fits-all security doesn't cut it anymore. We need layers, tiers, custom policies.
Absolutely essential.
So let's walk through some key policies. What do you recommend for different groups starting with, say, the most aggressive security posture.
Right. Let's call that policy one. Mm. Aggressive security. You're aiming high here, maybe 85, 90% block rate.
What's the key setting for that?
The absolute game changer is setting the action to BLOCK for the newly seen domains category.
Those domains registered in the last, what, 30 days? The ones attackers love for quick campaigns.
Exactly those. Now, this isn't for everyone. Think financial services, legal teams handling sensitive data, R&D with critical IP, places where security must trump convenience.
So you accept, you might occasionally block a legitimate news site.
You accept that trade-off, yes. A few false positives are better than a breach in those environments.
Okay. But most organizations, they need something a bit more balanced for their general staff, right?
Correct. That brings us to policy two, balanced protection. Here, we're aiming for maybe 75, 82% effectiveness. Still very strong.
And what's the main difference in configuration? How do you balance it?
The key difference is how you handle those newly seen domains. Instead of block, you set it to warn.
Warn. What does the user see?
They get a custom block page explaining the potential risk, but, and this is crucial, it gives them an option to click through to proceed if they assess the risk and need access.
So it educates but allows for judgment.
Exactly. It balances security with usability.
Right.
Ideal for general staff where technical skill varies. You manage risk without grinding productivity to a halt with excessive blocks.
Got it. Now let's talk high-risk individuals, executives. The sources say they're targeted 12 times more often than regular employees.
12 times? They have the keys to the kingdom, often.
So policy three, executive and high-value target protection. This needs maximum security, aiming for 92, 95% block rates. What gets us there?
We throw the book at it. Essentially, mm-hmm. Block categories like proxy and anonymizer services execs shouldn't be using those anyway.
Right.
Turn up the sensitivity on things like enhanced web reputation to the highest level. And critically, multi-factor verification, MFV, for any attempt to bypass a policy.
So if an exec tries to click through a warning page?
They don't just get through. They have to verify their identity again right then and there. Oh. It stops compromised exec accounts being used to bypass security. It's a crucial step.
Makes sense. And what about remote workers? Everyone's hybrid now. Policy four. Remote worker and BYOD protection, they face, what, 70% higher phishing exposure?
Yeah. Home networks, coffee shop Wi-Fi, they're just not as protected as the corporate office.
So the solution?
The key is the umbrella roaming client, software installed directly on their laptop or device.
So protection travels with them.
Exactly. Doesn't matter if they're on the corporate network, at home, or on public Wi-Fi. Consistent protection.
Yeah.
And another technical detail here, disable split tunneling.
Force all traffic through umbrella.
Yes. All DNS traffic.
Yeah.
No sneaking out through their home internet for certain things. Guarantees visibility and ensures policy is always enforced. No exceptions based on location.
Okay. And finally, policy seven jumps out. Graduated response. This sounds less like tech and more like, well, behavioral science.
It really is. It's about making security an active learning process, not just a passive block.
How does it work?
The core idea is adaptive policy. It tightens based on user actions. Let's say a user clicks on risky links and gets, say, 3 warn messages within 30 days.
Uh-huh.
The system can automatically escalate that specific user from the warn policy to the stricter BLOSCAT policy for newly seen domains.
Ah, so there's a direct consequence for risky clicks.
Immediate reinforcement.
Uh-huh.
And the results are pretty powerful. Organizations using this see something like a 68% reduction in people repeatedly clicking on risky stuff. It actually changes user behavior.
It conditions them to be more careful.
That's fascinating. All right, to really push towards that 90% plus block rate, we need to talk advanced configurations. And the big one, the one that always raises eyebrows, is SSL decryption.
Yep, the necessary evil, some might say.
It feels intrusive, but you're saying it's essential. Why?
Because attackers hide. Over 90% of phishing sites now use HTTPS. They want that little padlock icon in the browser.
To look legitimate. Exactly. If you don't decrypt that traffic, Umbrella can't see the malicious payload inside. It only sees the encrypted tunnel. You're essentially blind to the vast majority of modern phishing threats if you skip decryption.
But decrypting employee traffic, that means deploying a root certificate, acting as a man in the middle for your own people. Huge privacy concerns, right? Compliance nightmares, HIP, GDPR.
Massive flags, absolutely. This is where selective decryption is non-negotiable. You deploy the certificate, yes, but you must configure critical exemptions.
Exemptions, like what?
You absolutely have to exempt categories like healthcare portals, financial services sites, personal banking, usually personal webmail too. Traffic to these known, legitimate, highly sensitive sites should not be decrypted.
Okay.
This maintains user privacy for sensitive personal data and ensures you stay compliant with regulations like IPA and GDPR. You only decrypt the categories that are unknown, suspicious, or high risk based on threat intelligence. It's a scalpel, not a sledgehammer.
Got it. Selective is key. What about other advanced controls? We saw mentions of geographic and time-based controls.
Yeah, these can be surprisingly effective. Think about when attacks happen. A lot of sophisticated campaigns, especially using stolen credentials, hit during off hours, say 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. local time.
When IT security staff might be thinner on the ground.
Precisely. We saw a case with a professional services firm. They analyzed their successful phishing incidents and found a huge concentration in the evenings.
So what did they do?
They implemented stricter policies only during those off hours. Maybe they set newly seen domains to BlockBox just from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m., but left it unwarned during business hours.
And the result?
A 43% drop in successful phishing hits during those vulnerable nighttime periods. It's about focusing controls when and where the risk profile spikes.
Smart. Finally, integration. You mentioned Umbrella can't be an island.
Absolutely not. Siloed security tools are ineffective security tools. To get the most out of it, Umbrella needs to talk to your other systems, your CEM, your endpoint detection and response, EDR, even your email security gateway.
How does that help in practice? Give me an example.
Okay, incident response automation. Imagine Umbrella blocks a serious phishing attempt from an employee's machine.
Right.
That block event shouldn't just sit in an Umbrella log. Integrated, it can automatically trigger actions. A detailed alert goes straight to your CIAM. An IT service desk ticket is automatically created.
Okay.
And maybe most importantly, the user account that made the attempt could be automatically flagged, perhaps, for a forced password reset or even temporary suspension pending investigation.
So a block triggers a whole coordinated response.
Exactly. It turns a single prevention event into system-wide risk reduction instantly.
Yeah.
That's the power of integration.
We've painted the ideal picture, advanced policies integration, but let's be real. Deployments go wrong. What are the common mistakes people make that stop them hitting that 90% goal?
Let's start with being too aggressive initially, the overblocking problem.
Oh yeah, that's a classic. You get excited about the tech, lock everything down on day one, and suddenly nobody can get to legitimate work sites.
And users get frustrated. Frustrated is an understatement. They get angry. And what do angry users do? They find ways around security. They'll use their phone hotspot, maybe a personal VPN.
Completely bypassing your expensive Umbrella deployment.
Exactly. You've made things less secure by being overzealous. The solution is patience, graduated enforcement, start in warn mode, or even just monitoring mode initially.
Collect data first.
Yes. See what's being accessed. Build your allow lists, your exceptions, proactively. Understand your traffic patterns. Only then, once you've tuned it and built user trust, do you start enabling BLOSIC policies and do it selectively.
Earn the right to block, basically.
Well put, you have to.
What about the other pitfall? The set it and forget it trap.
Ah, the enemy of all good security.
Yeah.
You deploy Umbrella, pat yourself on the back, and assume it'll just keep working perfectly forever.
But the threats change constantly.
Daily, hourly sometimes. What was safe yesterday might host a phishing kit tomorrow. Your security effectiveness degrades over time if you don't maintain it. It's guaranteed.
So what does ongoing management look like?
It has to be structured, at a minimum. Monthly reviews of your blocked domain reports. What are attackers trying now? Are there new patterns? Quarterly, do a comprehensive policy review. Are your warn versus block settings still right? Do categories need adjusting? And annually, check your architecture. Is Umbrella still integrated properly with everything else as your network evolves?
So it's a continuous process, not a one-off project.
It has to be. Treat it like a service you're running, not a product you bought.
Okay, let's pivot to value. You've done all this work, implemented the policies, you're managing it. How do you prove the value to leadership? How do you calculate the ROI?
You focus squarely on annual cost avoidance.
Yeah.
This isn't fuzzy. You track the number of high-confidence phishing attempts, Umbrella blocks.
Right.
The sources give good models. Let's say you block 2,400 credible phishing attempts in a year. You take that number, factor in the average cost of a successful breach, that $1.8 million plus figure, and the probability that one of those attempts would have succeeded without Umbrella.
And that gives you a potential saving.
A massive potential saving. Using realistic numbers, blocking those 2,400 attempts could translate to an estimated cost avoidance of potentially $6 billion over time. That kind of number gets attention.
$6 million avoided. That definitely justifies the investment and the effort.
It makes the business case crystal clear.
Beyond that big ROI number, what specific KPIs should teams be tracking day to day or week to week?
Okay, three core KPIs. First, obviously your phishing prevention rate. Are you hitting that 90% target or getting close?
Number one.
Second, your false positive rate. This is critical for user trust. You need to keep this below 2%, ideally lower. If you're blocking too much legitimate stuff, see the user revolt problem we just discussed.
Right, and third.
Third, and crucial for operations, mean time to resolution, MTTR. For policy exceptions. When a user does need a legitimate site unblocked, how quickly can you do it?
The help desk response time.
Exactly. If it takes IT 3 days to investigate and allow access to a critical vendor portal, your security policy is actively hurting the business, no matter how high your block rate is. Aim for less than 24 hours standard turnaround on those exceptions.
Okay. This has been incredibly insightful, a real deep dive into moving beyond basic filters, DNS layer intelligence, granular user policies, continuous tuning. That seems to be the recipe.
That's the core of it. It's a shift in thinking and in practice.
So final thought for our listeners to take away, something provocative.
Yeah, absolutely. Think about regulation. The sources we looked at had specific guidance for healthcare, finance, legal industries under heavy compliance burdens like HIPAA, PCI DSS, attorney-client privilege. So the provocative question is, if you're in one of those regulated industries, what specific block categories may be blocking access to personal webmail during work hours, for instance? Or conversely, what specific exemptions from SSL decryption, like financial sites, do you need to implement right now? Not just for security, but for compliance survival. Getting this wrong isn't just about breach risk. It's about facing potentially massive operational fines. It's about regulatory survival in 2025.